fine.
Okay. Good afternoon. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, turn it up.
Good afternoon.
He's turning it up.
Yeah.
Are we on?
No.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners and distinguished guests and our folks in the audience. This is a work session with the board, one of a continuing set of work sessions to talk about the application of the surface mining overlay. I'm Gordy Euler from Community Planning. I'm coming into this a bit late in the process. There's a whole lot of history, which the people on my left and right have much more knowledge of than I do. We're here today to talk about what policies on mineral lands will show up in the comprehensive plan, and to talk about development regulations, which will amend what we currently have in the Title 40, our development code. So that's the purpose of today's work session. We sent to everybody a draft ordinance, if you will, and some draft policies, and my intent today is to have those up on the screen and to roll through those, present what we proposed, what the Planning Commission proposed, and to get direction as to what you'd like to do. So that's how we intend to proceed. All right?
That's good.
So the document that we have that's projected here without any changes, the underlying document, is the Planning Commission recommendation from December 5th, last December 5th. And I think if I can get this to work. It doesn't actually say here, but on the bottom, I believe, of the handout, it says in the footer, PC recommendations to board 12.5.13. I don't exactly know what all has transpired since then. I do know that you've had a work session on the map as to where the surface mining overlay would be applied, and that's been agreed to, although we haven't. There's no been no ordinance or official action taken. So this is sort of the next step to complete what we need to do. So This is the first page. Looking at policies. One of the things we propose to do is to get rid of a criteria that are in the current comprehensive plan for designation of areas that are surface mining overlays. And what we're proposing to replace it with is some language here in this policy 3.5.2 that says if you're going to designate mineral resource lands, rather than having the matrix that's in the current comp plan, you would consider these factors. So this is, again, new language, which is why it's underlined, and the document in front of you, if you've got it, is it's everything we're proposing to change from the Planning Commission recommendation is shaded in gray, so you can easily see it. That's probably the biggest change we did in terms of policies. This one here.
Hey, Gordy, you're not consistent from 3.51. You wanted to remove the word resource?
No, to add the word resource.
Oh, you added it.
Yeah, it just says mineral lands. Why? That's just for consistency's sake. We're talking about mineral resource lands rather than just mineral lands. So
I was looking at the two that were opposite.
Yeah. We added one down here. It talks about up here in 3.5.5 using best management practices. We made that a standalone new policy that's 3.5.3 at the bottom of the first page. So that's why that's there. It's not a new policy. We're putting it in as new language. That's pretty much what we did to the policies. So they're going to read pretty consistently, at least the proposal, the Planning Commission proposal, and staff agrees with a couple of changes that are here with the Planning Commission recommendation. Questions on policies? We'll move along if there are none.
Yes.
Sir.
I've passed out to everyone a copy of the requested changes from a number of citizens, including Livingston Mountain citizens, residents, that are asking what's in red to be considered when we update our policy.
Ooh.
we don't have to go over all those today, but certainly the process going forward, we need to be able to do our homework and ensure that those are considered.
That would include R10.
Gordy, did you want to mention to the commissioners that we have met and we have begun looking at these?
Axel, why don't you summarize the meeting we had last week?
We did meet with folks, and we, as a staff, received copies of this, commissioner. So we do have it, and we are absolutely willing to consider it. And I, unfortunately, had two or three things going on that afternoon, so I was in and out. But I know that they did meet with this. For the staff, and I think we even received one other late change yesterday or something that I got this morning. So we are looking at those.
And I take it that these recommended changes were after the Planning Commission's deliberations. Should, for this degree of change, should that go back to the Planning Commission for them to be able to consider to follow all the necessary process?
Well, it would depend on the extent and the nature of the changes. Now, some of the suggested changes are changes that staff has, in fact, added to the PC recommendations. So, for example, if you look at policy 3.5.2, you'll see in A, B, and C a lot of underlined and gray verbiage, which provides more direction on designation. And that was based on the meeting that staff had with the residents. It's not exactly what they asked for, but perhaps it captures a fair amount of what they asked for in that particular area anyway, not in everything, obviously.
Can you point out the differences between what they asked for and what's currently there?
I can't at the moment.
I think the main thing here, if I understand correctly here, is what's in red is of particular interest. And it looks like what they may have started with was prior to the Planning Commission's modifications. So what's in black here is prior to the Planning Commission. What's in red is what they're wanting to make sure that is included in our considerations.
Had they taken into consideration that anything zoned R10, R5, or larger is considered to be residential? So it's either residential or it's ag.
Well, any R of any size.
Yeah, anything that starts with the R is residential.
It's rural.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to go through these and see how they compare with, one, what we proposed, and one, two, what the Planning Commission suggested. So, for example, as I mentioned on this first page, based on the meeting last week, where the concern was, If you simply look at the protection from mining at the time you issue a permit, as opposed to when you actually designate the overlay, that was the concern. So we said, okay, let's take some of the things that you look at the time you designate the overlay and add them, which we've done here. You won't see that on their draft because we did this in the last week. So we've taken that bit of information that we know is their concern, and we've put it in this. We put it here. So that's one place one concern or one set of concerns that we've used.
What I would assume going forward here is that the next order of business would be for staff to sit down with the authors of these changes and to ensure that there's a full understanding as to what's being asked to change, and then after that conversation to determine whether or not that's significant enough to go back to the Planning Commission, or whether or not these can just simply be implemented as amendments when we consider it in a public hearing.
Well, we did sit down with the authors and spoke with them at some length. When I replied to Commissioner Barnes that I couldn't say exactly how they differed, I don't have the paper that they gave me on the day that we met that has at its very has somewhere a number of items that we added, for example, to A, B, and C in 3.5.2. So I don't have that with me, but we did talk about those things, and we talked about the rest of the things in red, too.
And if I can just add to that, I was just talking with Mr. McCullough, and I just gave Chris. So they have kind of went back over this document, added a couple more things, but I think it does include many of the things we discussed last week, as well as many of the things in the copy that you had, Commissioner. So I think we're making progress, and maybe we'll just keep trying to make that progress, but I think a lot of those things are included in here in looking at this, and we'll just keep working with them.
Say something?
Yeah. Only thing I would say, if at some point in time, maybe you don't have it in front of you right now, but maybe you could mark up something that shows the difference between what is actual now and what their changes that they requested, so that we could compare the two of them.
I think as we get to a final document and closer to an actual hearing versus work session, maybe in another work session, we can show you here's where we are, and here's the few things that, you know, we may have a disagreement on, or we may not have included that they would like to talk to you about.
I'd like to propose something that we do and that we don't do. One, that we don't turn this into a public debate hearing or anything like that, but we also we give the opportunity for one person that represents Livingston Mountain to actually briefly take the microphone here and to just help us to ensure that the process going forward is appropriate to address these concerns.
Part of the problem that I'm seeing is that what we got from the Planning Commission is what we call a striking amendment. You basically throw everything out and insert everything. So that's a big change. That's what this is. Everything in bold is changed by the Planning Commission. That's what it says here.
Commissioner, if you would take a look at what staff passed out, you'll see the Planning Commission recommendations are here in regular print, and some of those are consistent with with this. So I don't really understand that it says that all proposed policy changes from the PC to the board are shown in bold, because these are not all changes.
We have a little clarification here from our guest from Livingston Mountain.
What's that?
Introduce yourself.
My name is Tyler McCullough, and I'm president of Friends of Livingston Mountain and a resident on Livingston Mountain.
And can you help us understand the difference between these two documents?
Sure. Well, the first document I believe that you're looking at right now was a document that we had presented to you and that we had met with staff. And since then, I had dropped off another copy with the staff's new recommendations, and then there was just a few tweaks that we had. Some of the changes that, like in 3.5.2, that came along, our concerns were coming with the deletion of the matrix in the comp plan, which is going to be in the future. But if you don't address the identification criteria now when you're making the proposed changes, then it wouldn't be addressed at all. So that's where these specific ones came from.
Okay. So the document, the original document here that's not shown in color, but it's in gray, that is the resolution as it's been marked up, prepared for the public hearing. The question is what's been related here in the red.
Mm-hmm.
Are the changes that you're recommending the Livingston Mountain residents, are they satisfied with the bulk of what's coming forward for a public hearing, or is there still substantial work that you feel that needs to be done in order to reconcile these two?
Well, as citizens, obviously, we're we're always trying to get the most protective precisions that we can for our property. I would say the staff has come a long way, especially on the identification criteria piece. There are some other specific concerns that we had on the proposed in enforcement provisions that are out there that we have not been able to talk with staff about yet.
And does this address enforcement provisions?
Yes.
I was going to get to that if we could.
So there's really two parts to this.
Yes.
One of the identification.
It would help. It would be helpful if I finish the presentation, and then you can see we can
okay.
have this
sure.
give and take, because we're getting to the regulation part of it next.
All right.
We need the staff. Got it together.
So the Planning Commission recommendation was, again, December 5th last year, and the Planning Commission said you need to develop a monitoring and enforcement provision as part of what you do. So that was part of their recommendation. They have not seen the language that we came up with, but, again, the base document of this, without any of the gray shading, is the Planning Commission recommendation. We started with that. So what we did was to work on that. Some of these changes have come a while ago, some of them have come recently. With regard to code, which starts over on page 4, let me get there. The two biggest, we have two big changes. One is we've, under uses, staff feels that the Planning Commission recommendation was to leave extraction. It was to make extraction of rock, stone, gravel, sand with earth minerals as a permitted use. We feel that should still be a conditional use. That's the one change you'll see in this draft.
Where are you there?
That we're on page 4 under uses, right in the middle of the page. It'd be lines 149 to basically on one line 152. We've okay. struck A out of there and moved from permitted uses, extraction of rock, stone, gravel, et cetera, moved it down under conditional uses, which is now in 2A.
Okay.
So it's the same language. We've just moved it down.
Okay.
The other big change is over on...
What you're showing here is a different paper than the two copies that I have.
Commissioner, that copy was not
yes, that's that. You want to be in the other... You want to be in the that one, that's correct.
And this one...
The one with the gray shading is one...
different than yours.
That's... No, that's what we... That's what we're going through here. That document in front of you is what we're... Is what's on the screen.
Yes, I have.
Then I have this. We don't have that.
This is that. What I thought we'd do is you could follow along in front of you and we'd show you on the screen what we've got.
Yep.
We'll try it.
So
I can't see it, but we'll try it.
So in the middle of page 4, under uses, right here, we've moved extraction of rock stone from a permitted use to a conditional use. That's a major change under uses. The other major change we've done in here is, again, the creation of the monitoring and enforcement provisions. This was, again, at the recommendation of the Planning Commission. This is, as you'll see here, this is all new language because there wasn't much here before. And let me get over to the... Yes, go ahead.
So I'll just speak generally about this language, the context for it, and then you can ask questions and we can talk about the specific language. But the Planning Commission, as Gordy said, indicated we need to get language in here about monitoring enforcement. And you all, in one capacity or another, have been involved in monitoring enforcement with both of these, with more than two, but at least Livingston and Yakult Mountain Quarry. So the concept here, if you read down through it, is when these quarries are a conditional use, the hearings examiner takes a close look at each component of them, whether that's the extraction, the transportation of the resource, the sound, the blasting, the water rights, all of those things together, and comes up with normally dozens of conditions that need to be followed through with, monitored, done before extraction or done after. And so these are large documents. They have hundreds, if not thousands, of pages, many of appendices, and some of those relate right back to conditions along with exhibits. So the point here, where we tried to get at, was requiring the operator or the operator's agent or consultant to do a report in the first year and then annually on what those conditions are, which proves they have an understanding of them, where they are with compliance with those conditions, and then thirdly, any issues that may need to be resolved. So that instead of staff on a complaint-driven basis going out and looking up specific conditions or inspecting or trying to find out if things are being followed through, the burden and the onus is on the actual operator, the applicant, to say, these are the conditions, we know about them, and here's how we're following through. And then that's a process, or becomes a process or a document that we can look at and evaluate for ourselves, and the citizens can evaluate for themselves to say, yes, that's happening, or no, it's not. So that's kind of what I think, if I, and staff jump in if I couched that correctly, but that's kind of where we tried to go with this. You know, it was a little more difficult to put in actual code language, but I think that's what we're trying to get at, is an annual report on the conditions, and then in the third year, there's an actual type 2 process where the community development director would have to, in that third year, sign off again and say, yeah, we agree that this is where you are with your conditions, continue on, go forward. So that's kind of the crux of it.
The other piece that Axel should have mentioned is the metrics of how you ensure compliance. So these conditions, what are the measures of the conditions, and how do you ensure compliance? On the third year, there would be a report submitted to community development. We would do a notice to parties of record and within a certain distance, and those folks would get notice that we have the three-year monitoring plan in for review. They could take a look at it. We would look at it for compliance and issue a decision, which is provided to parties of record, and there's an appeal opportunity regarding that decision. So it does give the folks additional opportunities to challenge things that they see are unmitigated.
So when does the time clock start? Because these mines are already been in operation longer than 3 years. Does this start as though it was fresh as soon as this gets adopted and they're in their first year?
Commissioner, this is new code, and so it doesn't apply to currently operating mines.
And how do we address the current operating mines to ensure that the intent here is fulfilled there, too?
And that's an interesting question, just as it's an interesting question of how we would staff this process without somebody who is knowledgeable in the area. So we haven't addressed operating mines in this ordinance.
I assume we have the freedom to add language here that could address operating mines, similar to this.
I don't believe so.
No?
Because operating mines, by and large, have their permits already, and you can't change their requirements midstream. However, you do have the freedom to set up a program of monitoring and enforcement that does apply to them, and to determine whether that program is to be staffed or not.
And to some degree, you know, the idea for this moving forward has come from how we have tried to handle, or I have tried to handle issues at Yakult with going through those conditions, seeing what they are, what they actually say, and then whether it's go out on site or talk to who I need to talk to, but, you know, determine whether they're being followed or not and what may need to be followed up on. So to some degree, maybe not to the degree that makes everybody in the world happy, we are trying to follow as a staff sort of this type of a process, at least, you know, on those issues or conditions that come up and as they come up. But really what this is a shift in who the burden's on moving forward. You know, why is county staff burdened with that, at least initially, I think is a question. And then how we want to staff this moving forward, as Chris brought up, you know, I'm not a hydrogeologist, and I'm don't know much about blasting, and you know, but I'm trying to look into these things and communicate and talk and coordinate continually with the people who are, which takes up a considerable amount of time. So I think what we tried to put here is, you know, a process in place that as a staff we're at least trying to do to the best of our ability, but it would be nice to be able to put that on the actual operator and the applicant to do.
I believe one of the problems that we had is that we didn't have anybody in the county that was the overseer of what was going on at Yakult Mountain. While the things were put in place, it kind of fell through on the state side and on the county side, and they went about their way and was after the fact. And now when it comes back to us now, that those things were only held true for a period of time, and that period of time has since dropped off. So we need to go back and look at other environmental impacts that it might have.
And that's another difficult issue, is you'll end up with over 100 conditions in one of these, but maybe 50% of those conditions or more are conditions that really the authority for enforcement lies with a state agency like WSHA or the Department of Ecology or the Clean Air Agency or one of those that, you know, it's a condition in our county conditional use permit, but really the enforcement lies with the state agency, so we've got to be coordinated there on the response. And you know, that can be difficult, but...
We did have a chance to go over this document over the weekend because it was published on the web, and the main part that we have complained about on the enforcement provisions are that all the data is coming from the operators. There's nothing in here for anybody to actually go out at least once a year and actually see if the data that the mines are presenting are accurate. And so in our mind, unless there is somebody that can actually go out there and see that the data is accurate, you have a hard time just having the wolf watch the hen house and then report the data.
So there's really two parts to this. One is for new mines, what would be required of the mine operator, what they will do. For existing mines, we don't have that freedom to go in and say, now you got to do this. The other part of this is that what the county's definitions are, what our procedures are, in order to fulfill our responsibility to ensure that they're in compliance. It sounds like there's room for, or there's opportunity here to fill that void that would help us to know how do we ensure that the data coming from the operators is verified, is credible, is somehow defined. We have some process that would ensure that that they are compliant. So we don't put that burden on them. Unfortunately, they're already in operation, but we still have the responsibility to ensure that those conditions are enforced. So we need to fill that void with the process.
I believe it'd be twofold. First of all, I think that you have your conditional use, and the operator would be given a copy of that and would answer the questions or fill out the blanks, and we would follow up to check it. And we would have to have that designation from the county. That way you are working together and making sure that they filled out the paperwork properly or was in compliance with what was the intent of compliance was.
The goal of what we're proposing is to do just that, but it's prospective. We're looking at the future. Mm-hmm. So I hear Commissioner Medora's concern is what about our situation as it stands?
Sure. It sounds like what's already been identified, if we could wind back the clock and do this from the beginning, for future new mines, that's pretty well thought out. And it looks like that there's something in place there. So the question is, what can we do to implement some of those best ideas ourselves? It's our responsibility, and we can't put that on the operator. But what can we do to apply that to existing mines?
I mean, I think with the right program, and I'll venture to say the right staff component in code enforcement, we could do a lot, because they already have conditional use permits and they have conditions that they have to live up to and live by, and it's just a matter of having the time, the right person, and the commitment to going through those 100 plus conditions
and having that conversation with state agencies and the operator about acknowledging I know what the condition is and I am or I am not meeting it. So, I mean, I think we can go a long ways with that regard.
And in addition, the fact that, well, this doesn't address operating mines. No, it does some. I mean, this doesn't totally dump the complaint-driven enforcement process. And one of the aspects of having a plan on file with the county and having reporting by the operators is that we can check what they say against complaints that we might get from the citizens. Sure. So, for example, if they're supposed to have their trucks tarped and they're not doing that and we get pictures of trucks rolling down the mountain without tarps, that's pretty relevant information. And it would be particularly interesting if they say they're tarping their trucks. So that is something that could be used in the enforcement process.
Sure. So it sounds like there's really ought to be two sections. There's only one section. The one section only applies to new mines. But what we can do is to create a new section here for already operating mines that would define the plan and the process that the county would do in order to ensure that those criteria are met.
Well, they are vested to their, they're more than vested. They have current permits that say what their conditions are. But
although there's not a plan and there's not a procedure or a process that's defined for the county to follow.
But most of the regulations that upon existing mining is regulated by the state. And I don't think we can't go back and change without grandfathering in. So I think that when we talked about coordination, I think one of the things that we could do would be to better coordinate with the state and see what kind of information we could get from the state as to if the state is following up on the regulations that they have put forth. So that's one of the things that we could ask for. We still have to have somebody in the county that would be responsible for following up after the report has been filed.
Yes. Regarding existing operations, they have conditional use permits and requirements to comply with those conditions. So with our current enforcement authority and looking at those documents, we can, you know, we've kind of done some ad hoc work over the course of a few years with Yakult Mountain Quarry. I don't know if it's something we would adopt in code because we already have enforcement authority in the code. It's just a matter of being more, I think, proactive and diligent with the current operations that we have and determining what is the county's responsibility, do we have the staff bandwidth, and then relative to working with state agencies and other county departments, we need to make sure we have like a good who to contact list. One example is blasting. That's not something that the county regulates. It's with Labor and Industries or WSHA. So we need to know what measures do they have in place, and are they being in contact? Are they in contact with the operator when these blasts occur? So that's one example of it's not just the county. It's the county and other agencies. So.
So if we develop somebody here in the county who's going to be the overseer of what's being regulated, I wonder if we could be successful in requiring or asking for a copy of the state records as they get reports from people who are in charge of blasting.
Certainly.
Yeah, and I've requested those and received those. And actually, I talk with WSHA about that, but I get all the records from actually the quarry operators' blasting agent, because state law requires them to keep those records and the permit, you know, they're required to give them to those who request them. So many times I've requested those and sent them along. So I think Marty's right. We do have a code enforcement methodology in place, and we do the best we can, but what there are many conditions in one of these permits that are prospective, and
you know, right now, code enforcement is largely complaint-driven. And so we are reacting to an issue that's come up and trying to take care of it. But when there, for instance, you know, the Yakult Mountain Quarry, when I first got involved, it had well monitoring requirements and reports that needed to be not only done and generated, but at a certain point, a third-party review done. And also those documents should have been coming over to the county and then circulated amongst whoever wanted a copy of them. Well, it wasn't that the well monitoring wasn't being done and the reports weren't being generated, but, you know, and not being proactive, we weren't asking for those and they weren't sending them over. So we had to go back and get those and then get that third-party review done and have that report generated and then put that out per the condition. But, you know, there was a length of time, admittedly, where no one had picked that conditional use permit up and said, hey, what are those conditions that require things in year, you know, 3, 7, 10, whatever. And so once that happened, you know, we knew that we needed to get those things. But there are prospective conditions that someone needs to be looking at in these documents, and sometimes they're buried in exhibits and appendices that are complicated, and it takes a lot of work to dig through.
Sure. You want to say something?
Primarily, we're getting a lot of feedback from Livingston Mountain, and I have never seen any conditional use that's required from that mining pit, nor have we ever seen the state requirements or conditional use from the state. Do we have those today?
Well, there are two quarries up there. There's the Tower Rock site, and then the county site is right next to that. And there are conditional use permits for both sites. And there have been a couple revisions to the Tower Rock site. So, yeah, there are conditional use permits in place. And there's a number of conditions on those. And I have been involved with some complaints in regard to blasting and noise. And so, yeah, we're keeping track on those. I don't have the time to spend on them that, you know, it possibly deserves. But, yeah, there's permits in place for those quarries.
I can see what it could be a pretty big job to keep record and evaluate each record as it comes in, because it'd be coming from the state. But the one mine up there you referred to is the county's. Is that the county's?
The county leases the property from the DNR, and then...
Oh, that park.
The Tower Rock site is 40 acres, and that was that's the quarry that got started there in earnest after 2002, and then had a significant increase in truck traffic in 2007, I believe.
So, where I'm going with that, I'm trying to find out what kind of conditions we had on those when they were created, when they were allowed originally. Do we have those?
Yeah, we have conditions on those operations.
It'd be nice to know what those were. If we're going to monitor that, we would have to know what they were.
Right. I mean,
how plentiful they were or how little they were.
Yeah, it's, you know, the record's relatively clear. You know, I mean, the conditions are there. There's some that are subject to a little bit of interpretation sometimes, but the permits are there. The conditions are there.
I have a point. It appears that this ordinance is defining the responsibilities of the operator. And what we can do potentially is define the responsibilities of the county, not for everything, but on some of the basic things, because we don't have anything that's really written that would say, for instance, on those reports that go to the state, well, if we can build into here that says when that particular state report goes there, that the county will within 30 days or something get a copy of there, verify. In other words, there's a few basic things that we can define as a process, as a procedure here to ensure that our staff has a clearly defined task. We have our checklist. We have our procedures that define our responsibilities, and that would supplement and probably go a long way toward being proactive on solving problems, and that would be in addition to the complaint-driven process. So if we can come up, if staff can come up with that, the short list of the basic things that would be common to any of these mines, that would say, here's what our process is to do that. That would be filling in this other section for existing mines. That would be a good thing.
Okay. I think we can work on that. And
One thing I noticed up here that we haven't really touched on, but we need to think about as a staff, and I don't know if this is common or if this is just unusual in our county, but oftentimes the applicant for the conditional use permit does not end up being the operator. So we may need to readdress that, because I think there, you know, you would hope that the applicant, whoever it is, when they contract with or lease to an operator, would hand off that whole pile of documentation and go over it with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that everybody's on the same page. But I think we need to be clear in this section here about it's really the person operating the quarry. It's their responsibility to work with us on these conditions and make sure they understand them and that they're being followed.
So that's a good point. So I assume I see Chris writing here that's not being lost, but that is going to be addressed.
Yeah, I think that's easily addressed, actually. I just added a couple words about the operator in our monitoring section. So part of the notion of having an annual report requirement was to make sure that the operator was doing this and was cognizant of what all the conditions are. So, you know, Axel described a situation which he talked to the operator of a mine who didn't know that there was a particular condition applicable to him, and we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. They need to know what they're supposed to do.
And that sounds good. I assume that each of these conditional use, the conditions that are identified for each mine, they're unique to each mine. And part of the process of equipping us and organizing us to the point where we can enforce it and we can make sure that they are in compliance is that we would take, what is it, how many mines do we have? 5 or 6 or 7 or less? That we would take the time to identify what are the basic conditions that we're going to monitor and going to check, and maybe it's a short checklist that's unique for each one, and we would just simply make that part of our normal procedures and process. Maybe that's not part of the ordinance here, but it can be adopted as part of our procedures that would make the process clear, and we can also just simply make that a transparent process so that the community can see how each mine is being monitored and what they're being monitored for.
I think our enforcement code has a provision that permits inspection if necessary to ensure compliance. And that is that is something that is certainly applicable to currently operating mines.
Great. Okay. So
and then to, you know, think about what it is that the inspection should be mindful of.
Yes. So those are generalities that we've lived with up to this point, but we've also lived with a number of problems because we haven't translated that to what inspections, when, what are we monitoring for, a specific that's a schedule and a specific action item list for each of the mines. It would be a good proactive procedure for us to be able to know exactly what that is and whether or not that's being met. So we can incorporate that.
So, and we go forward with that. Some of the things we need, and I hear from some of our staff over here as to how time-consuming it can be, we need to be looking at what we're asking for and what we're going to do for funding of an additional staff member.
Thank you.
And how you fund that. That could be what we're looking at as to how much in-depth and how much reporting and how much follow-up on inspections that we do, even though some of it's going to be done by the state. I think that we have some responsibility as a local government body to oversee that the state conditions are being followed also.
And in general, I think our conditional use permits require that. And I would think that as, you know, compliance with state blasting standards, for example, if that were a condition, that would certainly be part of this monitoring program and part of what would be looked at.
Well, once we see the list for each mine, and how frequent those checks need to be done. That would determine how many man hours that's going to require and whether or not it's going to be particular staff that would have to be added or whether or not we can absorb that.
Well, I can see it. I can see the record keeping, because we're going to be record keepers of the state as well as the county, and then the follow-up regulation. So, okay, see how that works. Anything else?
Commissioner Barnes?
Mr. Chairman.
You got to speak right into that. We're very, very...
Yeah, confident. Mr. Chairman. I know the day that Marty and Axel and I went up there that we drove all the way up into the mine, and nobody come out with a shotgun to run us off or anything like that. And I do know that Axel and Marty have told me in the past, and the other people I've talked to when I went up to both Livingston and Yakult, that if they place a telephone call up there, that they've never been opposed to them. In fact, they've said that any of the citizens that want to go up there on a tour, that they would be more than willing to take them on a guided tour, and I, you know, pass that on. But I do think that one of the things that is I'd like to see happen is, if I'm looking at Tyler's sheet here and I'm looking at the sheet that the staff filled out, about 85% of everything they agree to, everything that's on this sheet that they basically agreed to. So that's why I asked originally if we could mark up where the differences of opinions are and then go from there and settle the difference of opinion between the parties.
Yeah, I think what we have before us right now is I have found what you have up there. I'm on page 8, and you have half of it on 7. I'm on my page 7. So when we come back and we're looking for what we think we need, we need to have the same piece of paper. It would help.
So the follow-up on this would be to make sure that there's good communication with the citizens that are concerned about this and staff, and also the development of whatever checklists or procedures, and then come back and present those before we go to hearing?
Well, I'm concerned because some of the things that I think I'm seeing in here would pretty much remove any mining in Clark County. So I want to remind ourselves of what our responsibilities are as far as allowing mining to happen also. So I'd be careful as to how we identify it or regulate it or prohibit it in this case. So I think we have to figure out a way to allow it and do it in a good neighbor way and be responsible for the conditions that are required. So, okay.
I want to mention one more thing, just because there's a gentleman that Marty and I have been working with, and I think he raised a good point. But, Gordy, can you scroll a little? I just want to really quickly touch on the notification requirement that's at the end for folks who may be moving in near a place, near surface mining. I think you got it right there. So the subject property is adjacent or in close proximity to that piece. The point I want to raise is we get calls sometimes. I think since I've been working on these issues, it's not all, a lot of it's around the quarry, a lot of it's on the haul route and the transportation route. But more and more often, you look at, for instance, the ribbon cutting today, large projects that require work at night. And so I think notification, you know, you can read it here, but it's important. And there was a gentleman who emailed today, but I've talked to you many times where, you know, his point is, I knew there was a pit there or a quarry there. I didn't know that state contracts would require activity at night, you know. And had I known that, I might have made a different decision. But that's important for us to, you know, make sure people are aware of and notified about, because more and more often, you know, Marty's being asked, or we're seeing this issue come up with, especially with state contracts, and they're not always timely in their notification to us that it's going to occur. And it really upsets people. You know, they don't expect that quarry to be operating sort of out of hours. And unfortunately, the contract requires that, and we get stuck in the middle of it. So I just wanted to raise that issue and then point out the notification piece in here.
Okay. Do you want us to come back to you in work session, or do you want us to wait a month or two and schedule a hearing?
Let's start with a memorialization of what we think we talked about today. And then we'll get back in touch and see if we have to meet with another work session. Hopefully we'll address. But there's a lot of issues that we talked about today that wasn't necessarily covered here. Mr. Axel covered part of that, something that we have to be aware of and somehow let people know and allow it to happen on those cases. So whether you create a traffic jam out here with 70,000 people on the road or a couple evenings, the I-5 construction was a good example. The work was done in such a way that the trucks were loaded both directions. They had stuff to take off-site and stuff to put back on the site. And, you know, an empty truck makes a lot more noise than a full truck. So those are the things that we need to work out. So
one sidebar Gordy and I were having was the question, you know, would it be helpful for the board especially to see this in kind of a column format where you have, here's the original language, here's the Planning Commission recommendation, and then here's what staff and or the residents are adding to that. Would that be helpful?
That would help sort it out.
It would be, but more important is to ensure that those interested parties have already participated in the process and they have buy-in. It would be, let me back up. When this goes to hearing, we don't want to start working through some of the corrections. It should be ready to go, and the interested parties will already have had their conversations and worked with staff directly as much as possible to work things out so that it's expected to be as good as it can get by the time it gets to public hearing. So I would encourage staff to work very closely with the interested citizens and with the quarry operators to ensure that everybody's a good neighbor and this is as good as it can get before we go to public hearing. If that means we have another work session between now and then, so be it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. How would you feel if someone came back?